Hi everyone, welcome to People I Almost Know. I'm Michelle and my guest today is Clay Morgan. I almost know Clay from pretty much the entire internet because he does a little bit of everything and I think I follow all of it. Clay is actually the first person I ever interviewed and I really put this poor guy through the ringer because I didn't know what I was doing and he was so kind and gracious to me that basically had he not been, I wouldn't be doing this today because I never would have gotten up the nerve to ask anybody else to submit themselves to this torture. So you can thank or blame Clay for this podcast. I don't know how you feel about it, but he's in the midst of writing a new book. And I asked Clay to come and talk to us about his writing process, how he does his research, how it all works for him. It was really interesting to pick his brain about that. And I hope that you enjoy this chat as much as I did. All right. So, before we get started, do you want to take a minute to introduce yourself to everybody?
Yeah, I'm Clay.
That's it.
You need more than that, don't you?
Yeah.
So I am Clay Morgan, and I am a writer and teacher from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Okay, that was short and sweet. That does the trick. So last year we talked about your book, Undead, and this time I wanted to pick your brain about your writing process.
Mm-hmm.
Well, first of all, I wanted to ask you, I know that you're writing a book about, well, I don't know if it's all just about ghosts, but it involves ghosts. And I was wondering if you could, just to give listeners kind of a little idea of what you're researching and everything, what can you tell us about the new book?
So what I can tell you is that, yes, it has something to do with ghosts. It is more about all the different ways we view life after death. And by we, I mean anybody, particularly, you know, North American people.
Okay.
And that brings in a lot of different worldviews and religious beliefs. Everybody from Christians and Catholics to atheists and, you know, naturalists who don't believe in the supernatural, and all sorts of people who are in between, where they might believe in the supernatural and it might be angelic, or they might believe in the supernatural more in a paranormal sense. And the unique thing for this book is that rather than me just, you know, sitting around researching articles or whatever, it's very immersive. So I've been traveling around the country, talking to different people, getting myself into random adventures, and going at the topic to try to really see what people do in conjunction with what they believe.
Well, here's one thing that I wanted to, that I was kind of wondering about, is that, you know, Undead was your first book that you wrote, correct?
Like, yep.
At least that was published.
Yeah, first book that was published, right.
So my question is, like, was it different for you going into the writing process of book two? Like, you know, I know you started it while Undead was being launched. So that was probably difficult, but I mean, were you kind of more relaxed or been there, done that? I can handle this or what?
Definitely no room to relax, I don't feel. I mean, I certainly didn't set the world on fire with Undead, like most first-time authors don't, although I'm very proud of that book. So going into number two, you know, it's just as much a challenge, if not more, because it's just as much a challenge because what I did with Undead was very much like a Christian living topic. And not only was I on that shelf, which was a challenge, but I was trying to be very different on that shelf. And the publisher was fully behind me, but you don't see a lot of, I guess for lack of a better word, weird books in the Christian living section. They don't seem to embrace humor and uniqueness too much there. Hmm. So for me and the publisher, you know, having conversations and all of us kind of knowing that it's better for me to try to land on a different shelf and a different genre of nonfiction probably, that creates even more of a pressure in a way because it's kind of like restarting to some extent. Mm.
Yeah.
So while I love the work, you know, even I imagine if you reach the top, if you're a bestseller, you know, someone like Donald Miller or Michael Hyatt, you really can't relax. And that's the way I look at it, because you have to constantly be pushing yourself to come up with new material and find stuff that is excellent. So for me, being a young author who's still trying to break in, there's definitely a need to produce.
Well, let me ask you, how do you, you know, when you're faced with that challenge, hey, do something similar but totally different, you know, how do you get yourself on a different shelf? How do you even wrap your mind around that and fold that into your writing when you're trying to produce this new material?
Yeah, well, for me, I have to be super excited about what I'm working on because, you know, it's a good investment of a year. Mm-hmm. And honestly, this idea came up when we were negotiating Undead, and I started mentioning some of the more paranormal type stories from the Bible, and that was always kind of looked at as a really exciting idea to pursue after the Undead book was done. And then as I got through a year of trying to, you know, go through the first time author thing, and kind of realizing what direction the book was heading in, this new one, then it just kind of continued to change into what I really felt is the book that I wanted to write. But for me, it also comes along with what book I feel God wants me to write and the kind of work that I feel I'm supposed to be doing. So there's that connection as well. Even if it's not on the Christian living shelf, doesn't mean that there's not an important takeaway, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And this book, it just got me really excited. And there's a couple of authors that I've just fallen in love with. One of them is a guy named Tony Horwitz. He's a Pulitzer Prize winner, wrote for The New Yorker and all this. And he wrote a book called Confederates in the Attic, which is about the Civil War. He basically traveled all around the South trying to find out who these individuals are that really haven't let the Civil War ever die. And he's just brilliant. I'm nowhere near his level, but I knew that that style appealed to me a great deal. And then I read Assassination Vacation by Sarah Vowell. And she went around like hitting all of these destinations related to three of the presidents in America who have been killed. And as I was reading, and I've always liked Chuck Klosterman, and as I was reading all these writers, I started thinking like, man, I could totally see myself doing that. So how can I take this topic that is interested to me and find a way to get on the road and to go find not just experts, but people who are at particular sites or places or people who I just might happen to wander around and bump into. Because to me, it becomes a real adventure, and then there's no way the book is ever going to be duplicated because it's literally my process of discovery through travel. So in a lot of ways, it's kind of travel writing, which is very different. You know, so when I end up in some little podunk motel in the middle of Ohio, you know, and I find out that JFK stayed there in 1959, it becomes this random little side story that I had no clue about. But as a reader, it becomes an interesting travel tale.
Yeah, it's really cool. I mean, just hearing you talk about it, I'm like, oh, that's awesome. I'm so jealous that, you know, you get that experience. It's really neat.
It's fun.
Well, this is actually what I wanted to ask you about as well. When you had posted the pictures of where you stayed at the prison overnight,
yes,
that's what sparked this desire to talk to you about this, the writing this book. It occurred to me, I was like, you know, just what you said, the research for this must be so much different because it seems like Undead was, like you said, more book research and reading, whereas this is a bunch of field trips.
Yeah.
And so I guess my question was, in terms of what you do as a writer, I wanted to know, how do you take notes and how do you process all of this information? So when you go on a trip, obviously you take photos, but what do you do to record all of this stuff? And how do you change this trip into a book?
Well, I didn't know that you were going to ask that, but honestly, that is the question because I've had to figure that out. And when you make a time commitment to give up a weekend or to put money down to travel for a few days, you don't want to miss an opportunity to get the material you're after.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the things I did in order to learn how in the I've done journalism. I've done a lot of interviews. But typically, when I was working for papers, you're going as a reporter. So you're supposed to sit down and have your notebook out or have your recorder out. And there's an expectation that you're going in that capacity. So when you're showing up as a tourist or a visitor or a random person on the street who bumps into you, how do you go about collecting the information in an ethical way, but also in a way that, A, doesn't intimidate the person you're talking to, and B, doesn't cause you to lose all of the good material you should be recording?
Right.
And Tony Horowitz, who I just mentioned a minute ago, I actually emailed him to tell him how much I loved his work, and I asked him about his process. And he was kind a day later to write me back about two paragraphs. And he told me that he really doesn't like recorders. He's very old school. And he worries that they do intimidate the people you're talking to. And if he can make notes, he does. And if he can't make notes, he will write it down as soon as he can. And the thing that he said that was most interesting to me, some kind of like obsessive compulsive about notes and stuff like that.
You are?
He said, yeah. he said really 90% of what is said is throwaway. He said there's very few quotes that are really going to be home runs. And he said you just learn to pick them out. And those are the ones that you find a way to get written down somewhere. And he said you want to spend more time listening, for the gold, and less time trying to capture everything. And so that really made me think. And when I got out there, I had my little handheld recorder. So when I met with a pastor up in Erie, he was totally fine with me putting the recorder on the table for 45 minutes, and I have a 45-minute interview to go through any time. But when I was in the middle of the pitch-black prison, it was awfully hard to see anything anyway. And when I bumped into random people on the street, it wasn't like really appropriate to pull out an audio recorder. And so you just have to find different ways. So what I do is I make a lot of notes in a small reporter notebook. Most of the time, while they're talking, I'm describing what they look like, their mannerisms, the setting. You know, I'm trying to paint that picture. And then if they happen to throw out a quote that I feel is really gold, then I'll get that verbatim written down right away. But I'm still learning. But it definitely is important. As soon as I get home, like when I stayed at the prison overnight, I got in at 6 a.m. I'd been up for 24 hours. So it was really important before I slept that I had like mind dumped
right. Everything
I could. And that's kind of the term I use. Like yesterday when we went on another excursion, I got back and I wanted to quickly write down as many things that came to me and type up as many things that came to me while it's fresh. So that's kind of the answer to that question, how I go about processing and recording. And there's a great scene in All the President's Men with Dustin Hoffman and Robert Redford when they're playing the reporters that bring down Nixon and Watergate. And finally, after like months, they finally get a witness who's willing to talk. And Dustin Hoffman's like, keeps requesting more coffee so that he can stay. And he keeps running to the bathroom, trying to scribble down like little notes on all these pieces of paper, on napkins, on toilet paper. And when he gets back to Bob Woodward's house, he's just pulling these scraps of paper out everywhere. And I thought, that's really not too far from the reality.
Of course, I've never written a book, so I was really curious about that process. Because on the one hand, you would want to be in that moment and really experiencing everything so you can have feelings to write about and have observations to write about. But on the other hand, you've got to have it written down so that you can use it, you know?
You know, it was really funny. I was at one of these places. I went to an old lunatic asylum that's reported to be haunted. And I'm going around with this guy who has these two huge 2,000-pound Percheron horses. And I'm sitting on a wagon with him. We've been together for like 90 minutes at this point, and he asks me if I want to drive, if I want to take the reins and help steer these horses. And meanwhile, he's giving me some of the best stuff all day. Like, he's answering the questions that are the most important to my entire research. So I'm sitting there holding these reins with 4,000 pounds of horses, trying to wedge my recorder in between my bag and my leg, and it's drizzling rain, so I'm trying to keep the water off the recorder. And you just find, like, ridiculous scenarios, whatever you can do to get the story. And it ends up being a great story, because here I am driving horses while this guy's telling me about, you know, the local beliefs on hauntings and religion and all that.
Yeah, it's like it's a balancing act, I guess.
It is. It was pretty funny.
Literally. Well, I just had something in my head, and my brain is like a sieve. About the recorder. Like, I use my recorder a lot. I haven't been writing so much recently, but I'm constantly in the car, you know, like you said, brain dump. And I have a tendency to, as things are happening, I'm writing in my head. And
yeah.
Do you do that?
Absolutely. All the time. I've used my phone for years, the recorder on my phone, but if I have my recorder now, my little handheld Sony digital recorder, you know, I can use that. But yeah, that's what we do. Our minds are constantly going, and you don't want to lose some of that good stuff. So it is important, I think, to get it recorded while it's coming to you.
Okay, so here's the other thing I wanted to ask you. Like, what is, when you have all this stuff, all these little notes, your Dustin Hoffman notes, at what point and how do you organize your writing time? So are you writing a bunch of notes and everything after you do these trips? And then do you set aside specific time to write and organize them into, you know, manuscript or?
Yeah, I try to write every day. Now, I'm on vacation currently, even though, as you know, I've been kind of working a little bit yesterday. But typically when I'm not on vacation, I try to write every day. When I pick up new material like this, what I do is I find that as I transcribe my notes from that floppy notebook or that recorder into a Word file, all this stuff comes back to me, right?
Yeah.
So by the time I'm done transcribing five handwritten pages, it might be, you know, 30% more on the actual page.
Right.
So that's one way that I can be transcribing like one little quote and all of a sudden the whole scene will come back to me. So it'll be two paragraphs by the time I put that one quote on the page. Or those little magic moments when you realize a connection between the chapter you're working on and a chapter you've already written, and you start to find ways that you can get, you know, out of chapter two and into chapter three, or little things you can recall that give more of a consistent flow throughout the whole work. So I am always trying to keep up, and I find that as long as I really sit down with my notes and transcribe them shortly after, very, very soon after the event, that I can go back 4, 6, 8 weeks later and write a really good chapter without losing any of that material.
Well, that's really interesting. And I guess what I'm wondering too is, that was my next question, is how does that work for you when you go back and you turn all of these bits and pieces into a book? So you've got notes and then,
yeah,
and then a little bit of writing around the notes as you transcribe. And then when does that turn into a book?
Well, in the case of this summer, it's been really weird because I don't have much time to travel. So it ended up being the month of July. I had to take like 5 different trips.
Right, yeah.
There's no way I'm writing a full chapter, you know, as I'm teaching full time during the week and traveling on the weekend. So for me, like I said, as long as I get the essentials, I review my notes, I make sure that I really write up all the important things. It's the first chance I get to go back and write it, I can do that. But the other way I think of answering your question is, I was writing a section recently where I had to tell a story about when I was 5 years old. And as I was thinking through this like 5 second scene in my mind, I'm going back 30 years, you know? So how do we do that in general? How do we ever tell stories that we've experienced? It's nonfiction. This really did happen to me when I was 5 years old. But I kind of close my eyes and try to really envision 3 or 4 strong, tangible things about that room. You know, so there's smoke in the air. There's a glass mirror on the wall. There's rain pelting against the window. These are flashes of memory. And so whether I am writing it that same day or decades later, you know, you give a little bit of the sensory experience and you make your point. And a lot of people say, well, since you're a nonfiction writer, doesn't it have to be like perfectly verbatim, right? Mm. But I think anybody who's ever read a nonfiction book probably can acknowledge that most people aren't using perfect recall when they write the quotes. You know, it's creative nonfiction. So you're writing the truth with flair. And that's kind of how I look at it. There's nothing misrepresented. It's honest. You never take anybody's words out of context, nor do you put words into their mouth. But you write it in the strongest possible way.
Okay, so that is actually really cool, but it's interesting. But I guess what I was wondering about more is like taking all these separate pieces. At what point,
okay,
as a writer, like at the actual, yeah, you know what I'm saying? Are you writing all along and it slowly becomes a book, or are you writing sections and then you turn the sections into a book?
Okay, in the case of this book, I had written a proposal and I had all of my chapters laid out with a full chapter synopsis.
Really?
And that's what you have to do if you want to sell a nonfiction book and you're putting together a proposal for the publisher.
Wow.
You have to say, okay, here are the first 10 chapters. It's a 10 chapter book. And here's a 2 or 3 paragraph analysis of what each chapter will be about. And that might be months before you ever write those chapters. You only have to submit perhaps 2 sample chapters with your proposal. So what happened was, after my agent and I went through the original proposal for this, we had some conversations with the publisher, and it was kind of like, this isn't really what I want to do anymore. I didn't even really feel like I was really into the book that we had created a proposal for. And then I started rattling off my ideas, and I said, if I could really do it my way, it's going to be, you know, it's going to include some travel, it's going to include a lot of different religious perspectives and all these things. So then I had to go back to square one, having already written 2 or 3 chapters. And I had to figure out how much of that was just going to get totally trashed. And then, if I am doing this as a travel-style story, what order do I go in? Do I make my trips chronological to match my pace of discovery? Or do I put it topically? For example, do all the stuff on ghosts first and then move into, you know, talk about exorcisms or whatever. So I have had a real challenging time juggling this information. Like, I have tried things and moved it around. I was telling someone last week, like, I'm just stumped. I can't figure out the right order, but I love all of the pieces I'm writing, to really get to your question. I have a chapter here, 3 pages there, and I've got these things, and I'm like, oh, I love this. I can't wait to figure out where in the heck it's going to go.
Okay.
So that's definitely happening this time. When I did Undead, it was pretty straightforward. There were 6 people who were brought back to life, and I would just tell their stories in chronological order. And then the rest of it was pretty easy to trim out, the other 4 or 5 chapters. In the case of this book, it has really been an interesting discovery to figure out, what should I do to present this information? And here I am in Florida, so yesterday I went on a little adventure, and I thought it might be a nice couple pages in a chapter. Mm-hmm. Well, it turned out to be kind of a full day. And now I'm thinking this might be a full chapter, what I came up with yesterday. So you're constantly playing around with it, moving stuff around, and that's just getting the information in place. then I step back and I say, okay, how much of this is boring? How much of this needs cut? Can I make a better intro? So I rarely sit down and just say, chapter 3, here is my intro to chapter 3. I sit down with an idea of what's going to go in a chapter, and I start writing. I move scenes around, I move paragraphs back and forth, and typically, whether I'm writing a chapter for a book or a blog post, which you can probably relate to this, typically there's like an aha moment where you figure out what should go at the beginning. Not always, but every once in a while, you're in the middle of writing something and you come up with something and you're like, ooh, that should be my opening line. So sometimes that happens.
Well,
did that answer the question a little bit more clearly?
Yes, yes, it did. I'm sorry. Sometimes I don't really even know what I'm trying to ask. But yes, it did. And that's
these are good questions because honestly, this is what I'm thinking about all the time when I'm reading these writers that I love.
Really?
I know I'm not them and I want to do my own thing. But man, I want to understand how they go about putting together what they put together.
Yeah. And I just seeing what you were out there doing, I thought, this is just a whole different animal. And I got really curious. And as, you know, like you mentioned about, you know, having an opportunity to talk to people and things like that. This is one of the things that having the podcast is the best thing ever. Because I have an excuse to say, hey, why don't you talk to me about this? Because, you know, I have a podcast. It's not because I'm a creepy stalker.
No, we do the same thing.
It's legit.
We do the same thing with the Storymen.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. One of the things I was thinking about as you were talking is that, you know, at some point, this book is kind of going to look at you and say, okay, this is how I'm supposed to be laid out. Do you ever feel that way? And I hear other writers saying the same thing. Like, sometimes I try to write something and it just will not be written that way. Do you ever have that feeling like it's kind of a living thing that is eventually will say to you, all right, well, this is the way I'm supposed to look. And then you'll be like, oh, you're right. Do you ever feel that way about your writing, that it takes on a life of its own and it has its own, it's just this really weird book consciousness or something?
For sure. I believe in creative momentum, which is why sometimes I'm very frustrated when I have to spend so much time on the day job. You know, I have to do so much work for teaching that, right when I feel like I'm getting started sometimes, it's hard to have to walk away from that for a day to go teach. But absolutely, when that momentum gets going and things start to fall into place, it's really cool. And then it's like a puzzle. And if you ever watch me when I'm sitting at my desk, you'll know when those moments are happening because I turn into like a flurry of activity. It's crazy. And absolutely, but you can always find ways to make it better. Like, that doesn't ever stop. And when I finally finished the very final draft for Undead, the day that it was due to be submitted, I remember telling my editor, you know, I feel like we could probably make it better. We could still do more. And his words to me were, excuse me, he said, you're never done. He said, it's never finished, just submitted. And he was talking about how he would go back 10 years and look at books that he edited and wonder why he didn't do different things and why he didn't change it more and all of this. So I've always kind of gone with that line that you're never done, just submitted. And when you have enough of those aha moments and you know you've got something good, just polish it and get it in. And eventually it just has to go out the door.
Yeah, I think Leanne said something similar to me when I was talking to her about her book. She's like, yeah, I guess we're always in edit mode. And I'm not a writer, but, you know, except for blogging. But it is, you're always in edit mode. There's always...
Well, you are a writer because you write on the internet all the time.
Well, yeah, I guess you're right. One of the things when you mentioned that the story about your five-year-old memory... I was watching Mr. Hobbs Takes a Vacation last week or the week before, and the little girl, the daughter, gets in the back of the station wagon, and I knew we were going to do this interview, and I thought of you. It made me wonder how many, since this is a different kind of book, since it's about ghosts and, you know, things like that, that kind of supernatural stuff, how much of your own personal anecdotes do you have to put in? I mean, you used a lot in Undead.
That's the other thing about the way I write, and I think it's a lot of the way nonfiction goes. I guess I'm kind of a character in the story, right?
Uh-huh.
Especially, like, even someone like A.J. Jacobs, who does all of those guinea pig diaries and all of those living biblically for a year books. When you write nonfiction, you're the character. So the answer is whatever seems relevant. I have put stuff in this book that honestly I hadn't thought of for a long, long time. As it's currently constructed, the very opening 2 pages of the opening introduction is a story from when I was like 9 years old that I had never even told anybody.
Really?
And I've looked at it a number of times, and I keep thinking, is that really going to be the opening? You know, it seems super relevant, and it's a good little story, but I was actually thinking, because my family's involved, and I was like, I wonder if my mom even remembers this. You know, it would have been such a throwaway moment to anybody else. So I find myself sprinkling, so far, 3 stories from my past, from my young past, into the book, because they're relevant. And, you know, there's really 2 ways, I think, of opening a chapter. And one, of course, you know, you need a great hook, first rule of writing, right? So if I have a really great story, a really great hook that's relevant, then I want to throw it in there. And a lot of times, you start from your personal viewpoint. So you start from, what stories do I have in my memory bank that might work here? That's kind of how that goes.
Yeah, I was like, you know, how many personal ghost stories can somebody have, you know? But then, again, I know the book is more involved than that, but I was just curious.
Yeah, and that's right. It's not even just ghost stories at all. Honestly, I'm not somebody who's going to be able to rattle off all of these times I felt like, you know, there was an apparition in my room. I just don't have those experiences. But the other good way to start a chapter for a book like this is my current experiences.
Oh, yeah.
So I made all kinds of notes about that prison in Ohio. And I actually wrote basically 2 pages before the trip even happened.
Really?
And what I wrote at the very top of the page in all bold letters to myself was, you know, there's this old phrase, in media res, start in the middle of the action. And I just knew that something crazy would happen in my overnight stay at the prison. At least one crazy thing had to happen, right? I didn't know what it would be, but I knew that there would be something. And it was a reminder to myself that when I sit down to write this chapter, don't just sit down and start describing some prison in the middle of Ohio. Start the chapter with whatever 3 a.m. bizarre thing that is happening to me in the middle of a pitch-black prison, because that's going to get people's attention. So whether it's an experience of the past or a current experience or even someone else's experience, I'm always looking for those great anecdotes in a book like this, because I want to discover a topic through experiences, whether they're mine or other people's.
Yeah, that's cool. Very good stuff. All right, well, I actually don't have anything else, unless you want to tell me every single thing about the book and all your trips, which I would love to hear that. I was like, man, every time you post something on Facebook where you're going, I'm like, I wish I was his neighbor, because I would tackle him as soon as he came home and make him tell me everything, and you would learn to hate the sight of me. You'd be like, oh my gosh, I got to avoid Michelle. But I can't wait to read the book. I'm real excited.
Well, I can't wait to tell all about how I ended up in the middle of the woods with 2 guys I didn't know, one of whom had a gun, or how I ended up taking and eating unmarked white pills at the Church of Scientology, or how I ended up hanging out with someone's bodyguard, a very famous celebrity's bodyguard. So there are just stories upon stories that are hidden in these trips and these tales, and it's going to be very fun when I finally get to tell them all.
Well, I'm excited. Now, what kind of time frame are we looking at? And by we, I mean you.
It's going to be a bit. I'm hoping this will be a 2014 book, but you know, one of my rules of life I try to keep in mind is that I just don't have a clue what the timetable for my life is supposed to look like. So I just work as hard as I can and when God lays out the plan, I try to jump on and keep up.
Hey, speaking of which, something I thought of earlier and I forgot to ask you is, has it ever been hard for you to balance what you feel like you might want to write against what you feel like God might want you to write?
No, because when I really get that clarity, you know, the only time I feel reluctant to write something is when it's, like, politically charged. So I really don't do politics. To be honest with you, I think that the publisher would have been happy if I would have been kind of like that blogger who wrote about all the issues in modern Christianity and all the fights between progressive and conservative Christians. And I've blogged about that stuff here and there. But honestly, I can't be that person full-time. And one of the reasons I'm not doing that is because I didn't feel like God wanted me to do that either.
Okay.
So, you know, I don't know. It's no different. If I were to feel like I was supposed to write a screenplay, you know, about some teenage comedy, it wouldn't change the fact that I'm still who I am as a writer. You know, there's a lot of good people who write great entertainment, and we all do what we're called to do to the best of our ability. So far, I think that God gives us passions, and He's given me the passion for certain topics. And I'm the weird pop culture paranormal zombie guy for now.
Well, it's working. All right, so claywrites.com and storyman.us.
Yep, that's the podcast.
And what's your YouTube? Because you're a USA History guy.
Yeah, I haven't really done much with the History Guy this summer, but the fall semester is gearing up. So yes, on youtube.com/USA History Guy, try to put out some short educational American history videos.
Yeah, those have been a lot of fun. I don't like to study, but I like people to tell me stuff, so yeah. It's perfect.
Yeah,
I'm like, oh, that's cool.
A lot of students find this helpful. Honestly, if nobody uses them but my students in my classroom, it's great. But I've gotten a lot of feedback already from a lot of random YouTubers.
Anything else?
That's it. I've just been trying to get this proposal and this book tightened up as much as I can. And on Facebook, you can find me if you want, Clay Morgan, PA. I'm going to get rid of the public page eventually, I think, because I just do everything on my main page, which is Clay Morgan, PA.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are kind of going that way. It's just too much to keep up with.
Totally.
Yeah. All right, well, that's it. I'm out of questions. Thank you so much for taking some time out of your vacation to talk to me and answer my questions. It was fun. I enjoyed that.
Oh, thanks so much for calling me. I love it.
All right, so that's it. Bye.
Bye.
That was super cool to get a glimpse into a writer's mind and to see some of that process of how a book comes together. So my thanks to Clay, and if you'd like to connect with him, I have all his contacts listed in the show notes. And if you'd like to meet other people I almost know, you can subscribe on iTunes through the Stitcher app or come to peopleialmostknow.com.
Okay.
So we're just going to start. I'm already laughing.
Oh, I remember how this goes now.
Do you?